Broadcasting from Orchard Park, New York,
and Boca Raton, Florida,
it's the Freight 360 Podcast. From freight broker sales tips to sports talk, this podcast is all about helping you grow as a freight broker. We're your hosts, Nate Cross
and Benjamin Kowalski.
Let's talk freight. Hey, everybody. Welcome back for another episode of Freight 360, episode 241 today. If you're brand new, there's obviously 240 other full-length podcasts, along with all of our other short-form content, blogs, downloadable content, etc. Make sure to go to freight360.net and check all that content out, along with the Freight Broker Basics course. That's your full-length educational piece that'll walk you through everything from getting your brokerage started and having it succeed. Share us with your friends, leave us a comment, subscribe, do all that good stuff. We appreciate it. All right, Ben, what's going on, man? How are you today?
Doing well. Got out into the pool this morning for a little morning swim, start my day. It's no complaints. We're in like the nice area of weather anyway.
Oh, that's the best, man. I always love like whenever I'd be, I mean, I don't have a pool at my house, but like whenever I've like been on vacation in the past, like I remember taking a trip to Jamaica like 10 years ago, and I was a huge like distance runner at the time. So I'd get up really early. Yep. And go for like a long run and then just go right to the pool and swim. And like a morning swim as like the sun's coming up is
it's
awesome.
It's an awesome way to start your day for sure. That's one of the reasons why I love riding my bike is because I ride along A1A and just looking at the beach a little bit and just kind of looking out over the ocean, like as the sun's coming up is like by far my favorite way to kind of like start the day. No one's awake. There's no cars on the road. You feel like you have the entire world to yourself. It's so peaceful.
Yep, exactly. And then back to the Jamaica thing, it was always funny. Like if I would run a little bit later when the sun was like coming up, you just see all the trash on the side of the road. So Jamaica's beautiful when it's dark. I'm just kidding. But seriously, it's pretty gross outside of the resort. So. Anyway, good stuff. Sports. What do we got with our boy Scotty Scheffler?
There's a really pretty interesting article on Scheffler. There was two things I saw in the past week. This one, just talking about the crazy run he's had. In the past 44 days, Scotty Scheffler has taken home more than $16 million. I read elsewhere, too, that I think his caddy this year has now made more than Rory. Like, that's how much he's won this fast.
Yikes.
The other part of this article I thought was really interesting, right? Like, before the Masters, Scheffler won the Arnold Palmer Invitational on March 10th, which is a huge tournament with a lot of the world's best play there. He followed up that win with a win at the Players' Championship the week after. The last player to win a tournament the week after winning a major was Tiger Woods in 06. This one, too, Scheffler has finished par or better in 40 consecutive rounds at PGA Tour events. The current record is 52 set by Tiger in 2000 and 2001, which is really nuts. And if anyone's ever, I mean, not everyone's obviously a golf fan, but if you look at the disparity between how much Tiger won in that period, too, he was winning like 1 in 4. Or like 1 in 3 tournaments he was playing in, which is like astronomical. The other part of this too, which I really think is relevant even to just business and just personality, personal improvement, right, is after his victory at the Masters, Scheffler told journalists that golf was only the fourth most important thing in his life. The first, he had said, was God, then his wife, then his soon-to-be-born child. Son, I think, is on the way, and we're all more important to him than winning golf tournaments. And to me, why I really respect him and love watching him play is I think that's why he is so successful at golf is he doesn't put the self-induced pressure on himself of feeling the pressure of needing to win. I mean, when you hear him talk, it's very like unstressful, relaxed. And he really attributes it to his religion, right? And I don't think this is, you know, an advertisement for religion. It's more that when you give up the need to try to control it to anything bigger than yourself, your practice, whatever that is, right? It takes the self-imposed stress off yourself, which is really what gets in your way when you're trying to perform. It's the stress we put on ourselves to do better, to do more, to excel, whatever that is, right? Yeah. And he really just takes the approach of what we talk about on the show, right? Even in sales, practice consecutively, right? Like just doing this over and over and getting better and better at it, and then trust in your ability when you go to perform, right? And that's literally all he does, and he is just lighting the world on fire. One last point. I saw an article yesterday too. It was in Golf Digest. Romo, obviously from Texas, was quoted, and he said he's probably played about 500 rounds of golf with Scottie Scheffler. And he said, in all of those rounds, you know, playing for fun with one of your buddies, he has never seen Scottie Scheffler not break 70. And he's never seen him have a bad round, meaning just even in playing with his friends, right? Like, he doesn't put all the stress on himself, doesn't get frustrated with bad shots, just practices, executes, and that's it, right? Just keeping it simple. And to
Tony
me,
Romo,
like,
Dallas Cowboys, former quarterback, actually from San Diego, California. True story. Huh. But yes, Dallas Cowboys quarterback. So that's, he's a good golfer too.
It is a very good golfer.
To watch.
Yeah.
Did he and do, again, was he in the, didn't yep, he do
one
like
of the
a,
matches
the match,
a few
yeah.
years ago? Yep. Yeah. I can't remember who else. I think it might've been Brady was in, I don't remember, but
Brady
yeah,
was in he, one. I mean, there's, yeah, been a bunch of guys,
but he was very good, like a very good golfer. It was interesting watching him play. I remember watching it.
So let me ask you this. Have you ever followed Formula One racing?
Mm-hmm. So that was not a ton, like, but in and out. Like, yes.
What's that?
I said not like religiously, but in and out, I read the headlines. Yeah. And I've actually been to a Formula One race and got to see it in person. So,
nice. That's awesome.
Really cool.
So, I think the Netflix series has kind of made it more popular. But one of the things in Formula One that kind of reminds me of what you were saying with Scheffler is like, I guess what's different this year is the same, like, so Max Verstappen has won like 4 out of 5 races this year. And people are saying like, he's going to make the sport boring. And it's like, I don't think so. I think it's kind of cool when you see somebody peak and they're very dominant, because then for someone to beat them
brings everyone else
huge,
up.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. So,
and now you got the underdog story too, right? And you get both sides. Like, you're going to have groups of people that like watching the guy dominate, and you're going to see the other fans, I think, rally around the second or third competitors trying to encourage them to knock him down, right? You get the underdog story, and you get the heroine. I mean, I think it makes it more interesting. The dynamic.
So where did you go to an F1 race? Was it in Miami?
No, I went to the first one they had in the United States. They had it in Indianapolis at the Brickyard, where they have the Indy 500. My friends growing up were huge race fans and mechanics, and we drove from Pittsburgh to Indy and watched it. It is mind-blowing to see it in person. TV does not give it justice. I've never really gotten into watching motor racing on TV, even with like my close friends growing up that watch it all the time, because you can't really get a feeling for the speed. Or the danger.
Yeah.
But when you were there, the two things that struck me most was, I think our motel was like 2 miles away from the raceway, right? I woke up at like 4 or 5 in the morning, like before the sun was up. It sounded like somebody was firing a shotgun. I remember I opened the door and I was like, what is that? And you know, my buddy's dad, Rich, goes, he's like, oh, that's the sound of them switching gears. Like, that's how loud that is. And it was like literally 2 miles away. And then when you get there in person, they're going literally over 200 miles an hour. And then in like the length of a football field or less, they're dropping down to 20 miles an hour and driving through what looks like a residential area, which they call like the field. And it is just insane to watch a car, you know, 50 yards away, go 200 miles an hour to 25 and then back to 200 miles an hour in like a block or two. Like, it's really pretty cool to see in person.
Hey, one last thing on sports. You remember we were talking about the PSLs a few weeks ago?
Yes.
So my mother-in-law finally went into like the Buffalo Bills new stadium experience.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like outdoor club seats is what they've got now. So part of the section's covered. There are like radiant heating, and a lot of the new stadium's going to have that. $15,000 per PSL per seat is what the price tag is on them. So
what are the financing terms? They require
20% down on the spot. And then you can, if you want to, you can choose to pay it over 3 years, monthly interest free, or I think they have like an interest longer term option. Mm-hmm. So it just happened. So I have no idea how they worked it out, but 15
That's
grand,
wild.
Man. And those are like not the, like, those aren't like your top club ones. Like, it's the seat, they show like where the seat's going to be. It's going to be like on the end zone, like, you know, like basically at the 1 or 2 yard line.
Yep.
Instead of more towards the middle of the field where they're you know, I've heard they were like 30,000 or 25,000. It's just crazy. So
I'm going to be curious to see how that plays out from a business perspective.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, I did want to make an announcement. I know we had the guys from Quickscope on a couple of weeks back. Definitely super excited to have a long-term partnership with them. They're now an official partner and affiliate and sponsor of the Freight 360 podcast. So you're going to start hearing their ad read during the show. So make sure you go over to quickscope.com. And it's with a K. So it's Quickscope, Quickscope. There's a link in the episode show notes, the description box on YouTube, and on our affiliates and sponsors page on the website. But what's really cool about Quickscope, and I've used it, we've got a lot of folks that have been using it and checking it out. They will give you a free trial of it if you want to try it out for a week. But essentially, this is going to allow you to prevent fraud by withholding important information such as a pickup number from a driver until they have geolocation verified, whatever, like basically taking a picture within a 2 mile radius of the pickup, and they can't doctor it. It's going to go through like some sort of an AI
vetting,
character recognition. You know, so really good stuff. They'll snap a picture of the side of the truck, and if it doesn't match up, or if it looks like they just drew it on a piece of paper or whatnot, it's going to flag it and they won't get the crucial information. So check them out at quickscope.com or click the link in the show notes if you want to get a free trial of it and check it out on a couple loads. So good stuff, man. Anything else before we get into it today?
No, let's have at it. A little bit of the news on the non-competes. I don't know if you want to touch on that.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. How can I miss that? Yeah, we'll hit on the non-compete news real quick. And then we have a question about non-competes that we'll hit on in Final Mile come next Tuesday. But yeah, so the big break of news, this happened yesterday. So today's Wednesday the 24th. This was Tuesday the 23rd. I actually have a CBS News article that was released this morning that has like kind of a more, hey, everyone had time to digest it. Here's the big takeaways. But the FTC, and we talked about this last year, is it might have even been more than a year ago when we first talked about it. They basically voted 3-2 to like get rid of non-competes. And it goes into effect in about 4 months from now. But basically, the takeaways are no new non-competes. And any existing non-competes have until the deadline. I think it's like September 1st or something like that, or end of August, to basically restructure whatever employment terms to get rid of the non-competes. The caveat here is there are still non-competes allowed for certain jobs. So where is it here? If your salary is...
I have the benchmark. It's $151,164. But here's the other kicker, too, right?
You have to be a decision-making position, right? Policy-making.
So it says, the rule, however, does allow currently existing non-agreements for senior executives to remain in force. Senior executives are defined as workers earning more than $151,164 annually who are also in a policy making position.
And I'm curious
because I think that's salary. I don't think that includes bonuses, and I don't think that includes like any commissions or comp.
They didn't really say though. That's the whole thing. They just said it's correct. Those earning more than that.
Right. So I'm curious how that line will be drawn. But the policy making position again, I think really helps that because I know a lot of people in our industry that are sitting on the sidelines right now because of a non-compete that we're making less than that, but certainly we're in no position to make any policy decisions whatsoever in any way.
So did you see that 151K rule, that's the existing non-competes. And then it goes on to say, still the FTC is banning new non-competes for senior executives on the grounds that the agreements stifle competition and discourage employees from creating new businesses, potentially harming consumers. So I think there's a lot of clarity that will need to come out of all this.
And the one thing that I read that I really agree with is this premise of there's a very different way that these are handled with the type of employer or employee that you are. Meaning if you are rank and file, meaning like one of the soldiers, right? Like in most of the big brokerages, you're signing a non-compete just to have a job. And if you don't sign it, you don't get the job. There is no middle ground to have your attorney redline this and go back and say, would rather have this.
Because
you have no leverage. None. But when you get to the executive levels, right, one, they share different information and what I would consider more closely in the category of proprietary that they don't want outside that company is the one thing. And two, when you're that level of executive, like I would negotiate my contract with an attorney, but I'm going to get a give and take because when you get to that level, they want you enough that they're going to be willing to go, okay, well, maybe we're going to make you still sign the non-compete, but I'll get stock options for signing it, right? My attorney is going to negotiate something in return for me signing that non-compete, which has always been very common within executives up higher up in companies across all industries. And to me, I think there's an argument that that should still or could still exist, but the rest makes very little sense.
Well, you also have, don't forget, non-compete just means working for a competitor. There's also like three main other clauses in an employment agreement, and we've had an episode on this before. But non-solicit, that's the one that people often confuse it with, which means you can't – sure, if the non-compete's gone – so let's say well, – I'm going to use TQL as an example, right? Let's say you have a non-compete, non-solicit, confidentiality agreement, and a works made for hire clause. I'll explain all four of them real quick. Non-compete means you can't go work for example, Pierce Worldwide Logistics, where I work, right? Now that the non-compete is gone, yes, now at TQL, you can come work for Pierce Worldwide Logistics, or you know, you can go work with Ben at Business to Business Logistics. Non-solicit means, which is still there, sure, you can leave. You can't take your customers, though.
Right.
You can't take any customers or employees or whatever. Correct. You got to start fresh, right? Confidentiality, you can't share any trade secrets.
You can take your experience with you, but you cannot take any of your customers, like you said, or you cannot convince other coworkers to come work for you, right?
Yeah. Yep. Confidentiality, you can't take trade secrets, such as like, you know, pricing models, anything along those lines that could be under the broad term of confidential. And the last one is works made for hire, which would be if you created a product or maybe a process while you were there, the works made for hire means anything that you've made or produced while you were employed there now belongs to them, which a lot of contracts will have as well. So
I've always felt there was an interesting debate somewhere in there. And again, we're not going to do a whole episode on this, but it was just that, like, I know lots of the larger companies viewed their training of carrier sales as proprietary, meaning like the way we've taught you to get a hold of, find, and negotiate with the carriers is in some way proprietary, right? To me,
we're going to talk about that today in the main content, but
yeah, I feel like that was the most loose argument for that, because I mean, negotiation skills and those things are applicable in almost any other profession. And I don't think anybody's doing anything different, really. It's just how much better they are, not necessarily different approaches. But
have you fallen victim to double brokering, cargo theft, or identity theft? QuickScope stands out as the only low-level fraud protection tool available today. Unlike any other solution on the market, QuickScope is deployed post-agreement between shippers or brokers and carriers. Shippers can rest assured that their cargo remains secure, brokers can confidently confirm the identity of the individuals on site for pickup, and carriers can trust that they'll receive timely payment. Start your free trial with QuickScope today by visiting them online at quickscope.com. That's QUIKSKOPE.com. Blue Book Services is the resource you need if you're transporting fresh produce or lumber. Their online databases contain thousands of companies throughout the produce and lumber industry supply chains. You can easily search their databases to generate new sales leads. Blue Book's credit ratings help you avoid companies with high credit risk, and their team can help resolve disputed loads. To learn more, go to producebluebook.com or lumberbluebook.com and click join today. Yeah, well, the big takeaway is all you big boxers who have had non-competes, if you're looking for a new home, reach out to us. We'll hook you up.
For sure. Nate or myself, if you're looking for a new home and you want to go work as an agent.
Yep. All right. Roger that. Good stuff. Let's get into the content. So we're going to talk about negotiating in the current down market. And you want to talk both carrier and customer side?
Yeah.
Like the whole the whole process of it, right?
All
like
of it.
How it's different in one market versus the other. Let me set the stage here. Okay. I had a and shout out to one of my agents, I won't say his name, but talked to him this week and he told me, say, hey, one of the best episodes I've heard from you guys in the last year was the one that we did. It was on prospecting and whatnot, but it talked about specifically in this market, how it's not about just trying to get a load. It's about trying to build a relationship, figure out what they're dealing with and all of that stuff. So it's important to start this off by taking an honest look at where we are in the current market. All right. And that is, you know, if you go back, anyone that started in the last roughly 2 years, all they've seen is this current market. Right. Now,
24 months,
3-4 years ago, like a lot of people did in the peak of the post shutdown expansion of like the boom of freight and the economy, it was a complete opposite, right? A lot of freight moving, shortage of trucks available. Whereas now, based on a lot of different factors, there's a less demand to ship freight and an excess amount of trucks, and it's changing. But basically, two different markets, and they have two different outcomes. There's two different bits of leverage that each party has. So I want to at least say, you know, set the stage there that we're looking at the current, what we call a down market, and there will be more down markets in your career if you stick with this long term. This just happens to be an exacerbated longer version of one. But that's to set the stage down market scenario here.
And I want to add to that, right? So the predominant criteria, like, or how you would determine which market you're in is just exactly what you said. It's the demand for trucks and the amount of trucks to meet that demand, right? Those are the two things, right? So in a very tight market, it's very hard to find a truck, right? That's the term we use in brokerage. It's a tight market. It's really hard to find trucks, right? That was your period of 2020 to 2022, give or take, right? Like the peak of the market. And in those markets, right, you see very different things that are important to shippers. And again, it makes a lot of just logical sense. A shipper's only concern if they can't find a truck is to find a truck, because they don't have a lot of choices to choose from. And they were in a position that like they literally couldn't get their customers their sales, like whatever product they sell, widget, washing machines, it didn't matter. They couldn't get enough trucks to pick up their freight to deliver to their customers to be able to literally make money for the company. So when you're in that scenario,
real quick, as a consumer, think about when you would go to, there was a period of time, like you'd go to Lowe's or Home Depot and like, it wouldn't have lumber on the shelves.
Right. Exactly.
Like, and that wasn't just like supply chain disruptions elsewhere. It was like there was people were at home building stuff on their house because they happen to be at their house all day long now because of the pandemic. They want to buy wood, so they go to the store. So there's an increase in the demand for wood. The price of lumber goes up, but there's not like magically more trucks overnight to start delivering all this wood.
Exactly.
Right. So
very quick peak. Right. In the need that happened almost literally overnight, people are literally not spending money outside going to concerts and restaurants. So they got money to fix up their house and they're sitting around their house looking at it going, needs fixed up. Right. So like kind of a simple example, but this is really what happened on a global scale. Right. So again, in that type of market, and again, these happen all the time. Like they usually happen about every 12 to 16 months. They cycle around in a circle, but the pandemic created this very long one that lasted longer for the obvious reasons. So you have 2 years basically where shippers are desperate to find trucks. In that market, right, they'll work with anybody that can find them an option.
Yep.
So prior to the pandemic, a normal shipper, a medium-sized company might have 3 or 4 brokers they work with and a few thousand carriers or maybe even a few hundred carriers. And that's a pretty normal mix of brokers to carriers, right? During the pandemic, like they would work with any broker that called them because anyone might have been able to find them a truck they needed that the others couldn't find. So at that period, you would see shippers working with like 40, 50 brokers at one given time because just none of them could really get them enough trucks to move as much freight as they needed, right? So when you can't find anything, right, rates go up because you're willing to pay for whatever you can get. And also for us as freight brokers to sell into them and to negotiate, the most important thing was just getting a truck as soon as possible that met their requirements to move their load.
So and you hope that truck doesn't like fall off because they get someone else's higher paying load 30 minutes later.
Exactly. And we would have to spend more hours making phone calls and trying to find the trucks, which so we needed to charge more, and the trucks were in higher demand so they could charge more. That inflated all these rates, right? So in these tight markets, what's important to a shipper is very different. What's important in that is not price at all. Price is like third or fourth on the list. What's first important is availability and the right types of equipment.
Like, then maybe you get me a truck,
Then maybe service. And price is like fourth or fifth, because when you're not moving it, like, it's the only thing that matters. It always reminds me of, like, you can talk about all the problems in the world, but if you don't have food, that becomes your only problem. Like, if you can't eat, none of the other problems matter, right? Like, if you can't get a truck, nothing else really matters, right?
Yep.
Now, flip side, the past 24 months, we've been in the opposite market, which means there's plenty of trucks for most of the freight to be moved. There are definitely tight areas here and there, and that's changing a bit. But for the most part, the shipper's preferences are no longer, I need a truck now, and they're hard to find. What's now more important is price, because if I can choose from 25 or 30 different options and they're all fairly similar, price becomes important, because if they're all of generally the same quality, they're the same types of trucks, same types of carriers, good maintenance, good service, they got the right insurance, and they're communicating well, they show up on time. When you got 10 options that are all doing all of the other important things, all you got left to do is negotiate price down, because why not? It's the last thing, so it becomes the most important. That's the market we're in right now. We are not in a service market or I can't find a truck market. We're in a market where shippers are looking for better pricing, better relationships, better communication, and a few other things we'll talk about here, but it's a very different side of the same market, right? And then the other thing too, right, is shippers have this still, I would call it, they call it like, my mind just blanked. It's the bias, recency bias, most recent thing seems like to be the next thing. So shippers are still really pretty aware that rates aren't going to stay low forever. So they want relationships with good brokers when this does happen, because it's not an if, it's a when. And maybe it's in a couple months, maybe it's the end of this year, but like, they want to work with good people still, right? Even though price is most important. So that's why relationships, right, from the shipper's point of view, are still absolutely one of the most important things along with price right now, which is a very different market than the previous 2 years, right? Prior to this, the two, right? 2020 to 2022.
And again, this is something that is cyclical in nature. We saw the boom in 2018, followed by the recession in 2019. I'm saying recession as in freight recession. And we saw the same thing 2020 till 2022, and then late 2022 until now. So I want you to be focused, or I shouldn't say focused. I want everyone to be cognizant of this, because it's going to change and it's going to continue to be cyclical in nature. What we don't know is what forces will cause these, and because of those forces, how long or drastic will it be? But these are great discussion points to be able to have with your customers, right? So if you, I think some of the best brokers that are out there, like you said, Ben, relationship is always an extremely important thing, especially right now. But a lot of the best brokers out there, they do more than just bring capacity to their customers, right? They give them insights. They kind of educate them and, you know, inform them about some of the trends and what's going on in the industry and what's coming up down the road. Think about the things that we tend to have access to on a daily basis that our shipper doesn't necessarily have access to right in front of them, right? We have all kinds of data, right? We have all kinds of information put in front of us that gives us insightful information about the market, capacity, which lanes are hot, tight, that are loose, companies going out of business, like all that stuff, right? Entrance and exits on the market. This is information that you can go give with your, speak to your customers about that, you know, maybe some of them are like super nerd, they nerd out on it and they already know, but the chances are they're focused on what's in front of them, which is, hey, I got to get these loads moved. And they're not thinking about, well, what's it? Because like you said, recency bias, they're going to think, well, this is how it's been the last, you know, year. It's just going to keep being this way. Well, no. The reality is, you know, you guys should enjoy and take advantage of the rates that you're getting right now because of where fuel's at, because of where capacity is at and how it's so loose. But the reality is every month there are more and more carriers and freight brokerage entities leaving the market, as we can see the data from the FMCSA's registration information. So when there's an equilibrium that's hit with that supply and demand, and oh, by the way, if there's any external factors, like if interest rates are reduced, for example, or if there's anything geopolitical that causes an economic boom, like, you know, for example, like large regional war tends to have that impact. Those things will exacerbate that shrink in capacity, which could then lead to a tight market overall on a macro level, right? So enjoy the prices while they're lower now, and how easy it is to find a truck now, because we have different kinds of headaches to deal with probably in 6 months or in 12 months, or hopefully for sure by in 18 months from now. Just get ahead of that conversation so that's not just all of a sudden one day, your rates are 10% higher today than they were last week. Why? Why is that? You quoted me $2 a mile. Now you're telling me it's $220 a mile. Well, yeah, I mean, this is what's happened with, the market overall because of X, Y, and Z went out of business and this happened over here and blah, blah, blah. Right. So I think it's good to stay plugged into where the market is. So you have some kind of leverage when it comes to negotiating your rates upward when it's realistically time for your rates to go up. And the same thing happens on the other side with carriers when rates are down and carriers have been pardon my French, they've been bitching at us for the last 2 years that we're underpaying them and we're stealing money off their table. Like I saw a post on Facebook the other day that was like, it's companies like DAT and Truckstop and all these rating tools out there that's causing brokers to undercut prices on drivers. They're the ones posting the rates. If brokers would just ignore those prices on there and start paying more money, everyone would win. And it was like, somebody replied and was like, this is literally the most uneducated post I've seen all day long. And
it's not how any of that works.
DAT's not making up rates. Those are like reported rates.
It's like blaming the weather guy for the weather.
Sorry, I went on a rant there, but that's my little, my angle on, get this, have these conversations with your customers and with your carriers, because it's going to change. And carriers, it's a great thing, right? They're going to make more money, right? Their truck note's going to say the same amount, but they're going to start getting paid more once rates go up. Shippers, well, sorry, you're going to have higher freight costs, but your stuff's still going to get moved. Brokers, will win either way. But I shouldn't say either way. The brokers win when market, when the rates go up because we're a margin based.
Sure, and a lot of them are struggling right now too, and going out of business. All the same with the carriers, right? Because again, too much overhead, their margins are getting thinner, and they need to operate more prudently and to be paying attention to where their expenses are. So again, tight markets, I think, also work out the companies that should have been operating more efficiently anyway. It's just part of why, capitalism works. Is in down markets, the weak businesses get weeded out, just kind of like humanity, right? Over thousands of years, right? Like the strong get better in a down market because they're forced to do things and to work harder. Some companies don't make it, and then the better ones end up surviving, and then new entrants come in later, right? It's just part of the whole cycle.
In freight, time is money and efficiency is key. That's where Levity comes in. Imagine automating your email operations to do more with less effort. Levity connects directly to your inboxes, extracting vital information from emails and attachments in real time. It seamlessly integrates with your TMS, empowering you to quote faster, build loads more efficiently, and book more freight in less time. Whether it's incoming emails from shippers or carriers, Levity's got you covered. It understands any language, any format, and even interprets non-standard formatting. Visit levity.ai today to sign up and get started.
Tired of struggling to find accurate rates and the right carriers for your freight? With DAT1, you can access more than 500 million posted loads and trucks every year. That's three times more capacity than any other load board. Plus, their integrated freight management system makes it easy to cover loads 24/7. They have the most trusted network of carriers, brokers, and shippers in the country. You'll get real-time rates on every lane so you know exactly how much a shipment will cost before you commit to it. Plus, You get instant access to top bids from qualified carriers around the country. Get 10% off your first year of DAT1 when you visit the link in the show notes.
Absolutely right. Like Stephen just put in the notes, Darwin has a natural selection, but that's not far off, right? I mean, literally, you see it with look on a bigger scale. Like, look at Tesla right now, right? Mm-hmm. Tesla is a company that two, three, four, 5 years ago just like dominated because they were like the leader in EVs. They laid off like 10% of their workforce recently, or at least they announced it. They've gotten scrutiny for like all kinds of issues with their full self-driving, not technically being full self-driving. And they've had people complain that their stuff is too expensive. But then there's reports that come out. Consumer Reports says like they're like the cheapest vehicle to maintain long-term. And now they're announcing a new cheaper line of EVs in the future. Like, you have to adjust, even if you're the power, like one of the powerhouse leaders in business, like, scrapping 10% of your workforce is, it's like catastrophic. Like, you have to, you're basically taking people out of their job, but that's what happens. You can't just decide like, oh yeah, I don't care what the market's saying. I'm just gonna do whatever I want. It doesn't work that way. You have to play by the rules of our economy.
The environment. Yeah. Exactly. And again, like, the only constant is change, right? Like, it's the only thing that you can be certain of, is that things will be different in the future than they are now. How they'll be different, how much different, when, nobody knows, right? So you gotta be prepared and work towards it. So to go, I think we can talk through like some examples on like negotiating like rates on both sides. And I'm going to go through an example that I was working on like literally last week, actually a couple of days ago, right? And the thing that I found that was what I expected was exactly what I asked a bunch of other my agents, and we're running into the same thing, right? Like, if you look, and I get this question a lot, like, well, how do you quote business, right, in this market? Let's just start there, right? So I'm going to use DAT as an example, and I'm basically going to use three numbers. You got your bottom number on DAT and rate view, you have your median, and you have your top rate. Okay. Now, those are the middle, like 50. There's still 25 below that percent that you're not going to see. And there's 25% of rates that are above the top that you're also not going to see. So be aware, this is not showing you the high and low of the entire market. These are where most of the transactions are happening, right? Which means this is where you're most likely to see your business fall. That's the whole point of the tool, is to give you an idea of what happened yesterday so that you can get an idea of what you think you'll pay today when your customer asks you, right? It's not telling me what to pay. It's just telling me what everyone did up until this point, right?
Yep.
So high, median, and low, right? So what I've noticed is every shipper we're talking to in new business, so we'll call them prospects, right? We're having conversations. We've engaged in a relationship. We've talked to them a handful of times. They're sending us some lanes to bid, and we're able to like start participating. Not necessarily moving any loads yet, but we're real close to that line, right? So this is what we're seeing on all of them, is that all of them, their expectation is to pay below median or at it or very close to it, right?
It's a pipe dream.
Exactly. So now think about it. Like, for a brokerage or anybody new out there, the likelihood of what you're going to pay for that truck, the number I use is that median, because it's the most likely number I'm going to pay. Maybe I get a truck that really needs that lane and it's a better fit. Maybe they'll take it for a little less. But the reality is, like, I'm going to probably pay pretty close to that, because that's what everybody's been paying pretty close to, right? So say in this market, maybe we're going to quote, you know, 8 or 9%.
Well, let me ask you this. How far back are you looking typically? Just for like the listeners, at pure education, yes, right? Because when you're on a rating tool, you typically can see, you know, historically months back, you can see the current, like, they're the recent week. Yep. What are you trying to look at?
I look at the two lines. There's usually like a 7-day or a 3-day average that shows me where it's been very recently. And I look at the trend line and where it stopped for the last month. And I look to see how close those two are together.
Yeah, that's important. And the reason why I wanted to bring that up is you have like your big like annual fluctuation in rates. And that's going to typically depend on like the region that lane entails, and also fuel. It tends to be like your big factors. But when you can scale it or zoom into like a recent month or a week or 3 days in some of these lanes, you're seeing like real world, as close to live as possible. This is how the market's been acting.
That's so really the important. Next, exactly. So the next thing I'm looking at is I will usually put that lane into searching for other loads to see what other brokers are offering for that lane right now.
Yep.
And again, it'll give me some idea of what they think they can try to pay. It doesn't mean that's what they will pay.
Yeah.
Right. But it gives me an idea. And then sometimes I'll look at posted trucks to see how many trucks are in that area. Because if there's only a couple, I know I'm going to probably pay on the high end. If there's a lot of trucks for that particular lane, I'm probably going to pay close to the average, right?
Yeah.
So again, we'll quote for like a new customer, like sub where we would want to be and pretty close to like break even, like maybe 8 or 9% off of the median is about where we'll quote for a new customer. Because we know we've got to be cheaper at first to be able to even start working with them and to build some of this trust. And also from their point of view, right? Like they don't know me at all. So it's far more risky for them to give me a load than the people they've been working with all year. So they need some savings to offset the risk of me not doing what I say I'm going to do, right? It's still just my word.
Yeah.
So there's real economic reason why you're going to be a little cheaper for even your first month or your first few loads. So again, gives you an idea of what we're quoting to a prospect to get in the door. The other interesting thing is I've gone and asked all my clients and all my agents that I work with, hey, all the customers that you onboarded like 3 and 4 months ago from like January and December, what were your average margins then? And where were you quoting? And where are you quoting now, right? Like 4 months later. And it's almost every single one sees the exact same thing. And it's what you would guess, right? As trust increases, so is their willingness to pay you a little premium to get good service and to pay you for your work, because now they trust you the same as the other people. So what I'm seeing is, after about 3 months of working with their customers, they went from making, you know, 7 or 8% above median is where they were able to charge, maybe even a little lower, right? Real close to median in some cases, where 3 months later, they're making 12% above median. Like, not a lot of money, but I mean, they're making 150, 200 bucks on a load, enough to cover 50, 60 bucks in expenses, the time to find the truck. And that's still a fair rate to the shipper, and the carrier is getting the bulk of it, right? Like they're only literally making the money to match the truck up with the shipper, which is what should happen. So you see the margins increase over time as trust does, but it also gives you a good idea of like where you would expect to quote, I think, new prospects. Because the other thing that I think no one really thinks about is when we're talking with a shipper, we're assuming we're competing against other brokers. But that's not true, right? From the shipper's point of view, when I put my bid in and Steven puts in his bid and say he's working for the asset side, Steven doesn't have to add a margin to his trucks.
Yeah.
So he can be cheaper than me and will be. He's going to beat me
and should be his profit. Right. For the, yeah, exactly.
So again, like that's why if you got a shipper and you're trying to ask them to work with you and your brokerage and you want to do business with them, they're looking at this going like, well, I pay my carriers directly cheaper than you're asking. And my other brokers, I might pay what you're asking, but I know them and trust them. And I don't really need you that much right now. So you've got to either convince me why I should want to work with you by building a relationship and trust, talking to me, getting to know me, helping me understand why you think you should be working with me, all those things. Then you get to that point, right?
Which is, let me ask something different in here, right? Because there's two. Okay, we just talked about Quickscope earlier, right? Like, you know, newer product, great product, but they've got to prove themselves. How do they do that? Well, they offer a free trial, right? Yes. Because so they're going to basically operate at a slight loss for a little bit to gain your trust. Right. Yep. Not saying you have to take a loss as a freight broker on your business with your customers, but don't expect to be making fat margins on a brand new customer, right? Like, hey, I am going to, and be transparent about it. Like, I am going to basically work for free for the next week on your loads because I want a chance to be at the table when it comes to quoting your freight in the future, right? Keep in mind that these are not realistic rates, right? They're going to be higher, but I'm basically working for free because I want you to see firsthand and experience the level of service that I can truly provide you. Yep. And if you can't actually deliver that service, well, that sucks. SOL. You're just not going to do it. But that is one way. Another way, if it's a very price sensitive customer, there are creative ways to find cost savings And some of this stuff gets, well, it definitely gets way more advanced, right? But you could look at stuff like drop trailer programs for like trailer pool. You could look at consolidation of certain shipments, rerouting some of their routing guide to try and drop mileage. If they've got partials, you could look to move them on a hot shot instead of, or, you know, partial out instead of a full dedicated truckload. I mean, there's all kinds of ways. But the reality is when you start to introduce those ideas and solutions, even if they're like, no, that's not, we're not going to go that route. Like, you're adding value by showing that, like, correct, you're thinking outside the, you know, the box that everybody else seems to be exactly trapped inside of.
I'll give you a couple easy ones. And this hit me too over the weekend. I was talking to the client about this, is it's really understanding what's important to your customer, right? Is the most important part of this whole process, and asking questions. And what happened was, we were at a restaurant for breakfast, my daughter, my wife and I, on Sunday. And I asked for like the smallest cup of milk they had, because my daughter's four. And again, it's more of like wanting to make sure it doesn't get spilled, as opposed to like her holding a large cup. And the waitress brought me over like a normal size cup filled with milk, right? And she says, and I said, oh, I'm sorry, like, do you have something smaller? And she looks at me and goes, oh, don't worry, it's the same price as the small one, right?
And but to you, me, don't care, right? It's the, that, well, wasn't the, that wasn't what you wanted.
That was when it hit
me. I've been in that situation before, yeah.
Exactly. And I thought, and I was like, I kind of smiled and I was like, it's okay. And like, we dealt with it, because I don't think they had any other cup. But the point was, like, the lesson and my takeaway, like, I made a note, because I'm like, this is assuming instead of asking what is important to me, the customer, right? What was important to me is like, I didn't give a shit about the cost. Like, I would have paid more money for the cup that wasn't going to spill, that made me less nervous and had to pay attention less, right?
Yep.
The price wasn't as important as my specific need. They assumed I cared about price because that's what most people said. And then there was a disconnect, because that was an opportunity for them to make more money if they wanted to. But you see, like, the willingness and just the need was never understood, to your point, right? Like, yep. And it's just, so from the shipper's point of view, right, what you were just saying is you want to really start to understand what is important to them. And I'll give you a real example of how you can be cheaper without having to do even anything complicated, and sometimes asking questions. So this happened last week. Working with a shipper, and they were like, yes, this lane has been really difficult and we're trying to keep prices down on it. I'm like, okay, where are you looking to be? And we start to ask some more questions to get to know them a little better. They open up a little bit. And I asked them, I said, hey, are there any specific days of the week that this load keeps going, that this load is going out? And they're like, well, what do you mean? I'm like, well, do you always ship it on like a Monday, a Tuesday, Wednesday? Does it vary? Like, how does this load actually fall within a weekly basis? And they're like, oh, most of the weeks it goes on a Monday, Tuesday, but like the third week of every month, sometimes it goes on a Wednesday or Thursday. And I said, let me ask you something. Do you see a discrepancy in what you're paying on the third week on the Wednesday or Thursday? And they said, you know, I think maybe we did. And then they looked and they were paying more on that day of the week. And what it was there was where that lane was a very like not populated area. And there were lots of trucks there Mondays and Tuesdays, but on Wednesdays and Thursdays, there were very few trucks. So the rates went up. And just by asking that question, I was able to kind of look, and I happened to know that lane, and I knew that we had harder covering that load on a Thursday than on Monday and Tuesday. And I was like, yeah, I've kind of seen that, where it seems like there's just a lot less trucks there, and we pay a premium on Thursdays every week. Let me ask you, I mean, are you able to plan a little ahead to make that third week, make that load go out on Monday, Tuesday, like your first 2 weeks of the month? And they went, yeah, I think if we move some things around and I talk to the other guy in the warehouse, like, we could probably make that work. And I was like, well, hey, great. Like, if you can do that, that likely solves that problem you were telling me. They didn't give me the load. I didn't move that load, and I didn't physically solve it. But by me asking the questions, I was able to show them, just like you said, there are ways that they can just do some little things that help them get better operations. My trust in that relationship went through the roof. I don't need to get a load in that call, and I need to get that load. I needed to get them to understand, whether it's me running a trial load, one or two, and proving it, or just through a conversation, that I can add value in ways other than just getting you a truck for a load. That's really how you find the need and can find that service, even in that price, you know, context.
Yeah. And I kind of go back to what we were saying earlier. Is it like, it's not that a traffic manager, to kind of generalize them all, it's not that they're ignorant, but they have different things that they're focused on. And it's not right. trying to analyze why one week costs more than another week. They just overall, like, they're probably given their left and right limits of, hey, here's what we are paying on average. Try to get it covered for this. And if it's yep. higher the third week of the month and they don't know why, they're going to start giving pushback to a broker without having right. other context. But by you asking that question, you helped them identify something that they otherwise
wouldn't have looked at.
No idea about, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
And here's the other side too. And I know we're kind of wrapping up, so I don't want to go deep into this, but this is also true on the carrier side, right? And I'll give you another example. So another shipper we're working with early on, maybe we moved a load with, they're like, hey, we've got 10 loads a day that are going to be starting in like 3 weeks. Then we'll be at 15 loads a day. But right now we've only got 3 or 4 loads a day. And again, they want to pay, you know, median rate or below. So what we're doing is asking them more questions to understand the pickups, the deliveries, the actual time it takes to load, to unload, when they have the loads, to really understand as much as we can. Mm-hmm. Because then we go to the carrier side. And the same thing is true. Everybody always wants to argue that the carriers and the brokers all just argue the rate side of things, right? But the reality is the reason economically that everybody argues the rate is because money is the only thing that catches everything else. Meaning, like for a driver, to argue for $200 or to wait for 3 hours to load, most drivers would rather not get the $200 to load within an hour. Like, it's more important to have your wheels moving in under an hour than to wait 3 or 4 hours and get the extra $200, right?
Yeah, to chase something 100 miles away. Like, the best way to make money as a driver is to be driving and getting paid to drive. Two terrible ways to lose money as a truck driver is to sit there not moving when you should be moving, or right. to drive, or even worse, to burn fuel driving empty somewhere else.
And then it'll get canceled.
And not getting paid to do it. So,
yep. So, but when you think about it, there's very little trust with a carrier you've only talked to once, that just called you once and that you might not have worked with. So they don't believe you at all. You might have a shipper that actually can load them in under an hour, and the receiver gets them unloaded in under an hour, and it's very close, and this lane really works for them, and the load's lighter than normal, and it's a fast load and unload, right? So you have the criteria that would make it valuable to a carrier. The reason they won't give you a discount is they don't believe you. They don't believe that shit at all. They think you're lying, you're going to send them there, they're going to wait forever, and then they end up with the short end of the stick, not getting paid for either or, right? So when you're able to talk more with your carriers, use them more, build relationships with them, and you can get them to see you can help them in ways outside of just paying more for every situation, like, both of you can win. Yeah. And it also goes back to volume, right? So like, we were calling a lot of carriers. This lane was LA to Washington, right? And we found a bunch of carriers in Washington running the other side of the lane that were using spot loads to get back every week. Their rates were varied. Sometimes the shippers stunk. They sat there forever. It didn't work well. Now, sometimes they're making $1,700 or $1,800 to get back, and then sometimes they're making $1,200 to get back and a whole bunch of headaches. So when we were talking, they were like, hey, look, if we can give you 5 loads a day heading back up, can you meet our shipper's rate of like $1,600? So it's a little less than their peak, but a lot more than their lowest, and they can rely on that every week, the timing, the predictability, and working with the same places, which are all very valuable. But you need to be able to have enough conversations and to be able to actually build a relationship with a carrier to be able to use the other things outside of money. Because without trust, money's the only thing they trust. Pay me more. I don't believe anything you're saying, right?
Yep.
And I think it's a really good lesson for both sides of brokerage to realize there are lots of things that are important to your shipper and to your carriers. And there are lots of ways to be able to make situations work outside of just paying more and paying less.
I want to wrap up with a challenge, right? As a takeaway and an actual actionable item. Okay. The next, and this is going to be for both the shipper and the carrier side. The next time that you talk to a customer and you get pushback on price, I want you to try something that we said on this call, whether that be to have a conversation that you've never had about the market and where it's at and ask some questions to uncover more information, or maybe try to ask questions to try to uncover an alternative option, or ask a question to find out priorities that you wouldn't have known otherwise, right? Just see what that does to your conversation with your prospects that it wasn't doing before. And the other other side is with carriers, right? If you have a carrier that's giving you pushback on price or whatnot, ask some other questions, right? You want to, what's important to that carrier, right? Is it where they're trying to get to? Is it when they're trying to get there?
Yep.
Is it just price because they don't really care? Those things all matter. And I know we didn't really get into that part of it today. But those are huge takeaways that if you're not doing that now, I challenge you, try it the next time you're on a call with those folks.
Correct. And the only thing I want to add is, right, you're going to find groups of every category. Some carriers that are perfectly happy playing the risk game of trying to find the highest paying load every single day once they're empty. And hey, they can go with that business model. You will find some that really value predictability and want to run a more stable business. Those are usually the fits that I'm trying to find to work with, right?
Yep.
And again, you'll find everybody in between, but when you ask more questions and you start to understand them, like, you just end up doing better business because there's lots of ways for everybody to win. But if nobody trusts each other and nobody knows each other, then the only thing left is rate. And that's all everybody bitches and argues about, right? And that's why relationships are by far the most important aspect of the business.
For sure. Well, that's a good discussion. Way to dig in on both sides there. Customer obviously is the driving factor right now, but cool, man. What else we got coming up? We got a Blue Book episode in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
And talk some more produce season stuff. Now that's officially produce season. Kicked off earlier this month.
I'm really excited about that too.
We're going to be in the logistics lounge in a couple months. Got to meet with Pedro, right, yesterday. Meet those guys. But yeah.
I'm pretty excited. The DAT carrier course should be out soon. And I'm going to be anxious to kind of see how that plays out. Something Nate and I have been working on for probably years now. And that's wrapped and that's going to be
released. Very long, slow burn.
We're really excited to be able to get it out there. So that's going to be really cool too.
Definitely. Good stuff, man. Final thoughts?
Whether you believe you can or believe you can't, you're right.
And until next time, go Bills. That wraps up this episode of Freight 360. Check out the show notes for links to anything that we've referenced on this episode. And make sure to visit us online at freight360.net to see our entire library of episodes, videos, blogs, and more.
And make sure to check us out on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel for daily and weekly tips and content. And if you'd like your question answered on the show, fill out the Contact Us form on our site, and we'll see you next week.